So I think the first thing is a lot of the folks who have been covering stop and frisk, a lot of the folks who've been advocating for its end, and of course a lot of the folks who've been directly targeted by stop and frisk practices would like to envision a New York that is actually welcoming to all of its inhabitants. You know, New York has this sort of global reputation as the city where anyone can come and make something happen. It's the city that where anyone can come and make themselves feel at home. And I think that, you know, that has historically been true for certain communities, primarily white communities or communities of privilege. But it has historically not been true for communities of color. And so, you know, we did a couple pieces specifically talking to young men of color or young people of color who've been targeted by stop and frisk dating all the way back to 2010. And we actually talked to the lead plaintiff, David Floyd, who, you know, really emphasize this idea of wanting to walk down the street and not feel the sense of fear that you are a target. You know, in my reporting, I talked to a number of psychologists and policy folks who were really trying to bring home the point, like the psychological and emotional and physical impact that a policy like stop and frisk has on someone, right? And so if you are a young man of color who's walking down the street and you do get stopped and you do get cited for whatever reason, I think that it has a profound impact on not only the way that you see police, but the way that you see yourself. So I was talking to a young man actually last summer who lives in Brownsville, Brooklyn. And, you know, he's a guy who works at a community center. He had grown up in Brownsville. And he really communicated to me just, you know, feeling like you've done something wrong, right? Just in your being and in your skin and in your body, you walking down the street is somehow a criminal act. And I mean, that is wrong on any number of levels, but it's especially wrong, I think, when you think about it in this context of really policing the bodies of people of color. And, you know, I know that a lot of stop and frisk has talked very specifically about black and brown men, but it's also an issue that we've seen in queer communities of color. It's also an issue that we've seen with women of color. And I think the broader issue of surveillance of communities of color is something that you see, you know, kind of across these different spectrums, right? So the AP, the Associated Press, did a story or did an investigation last year looking into sort of the unwarranted surveillance of Muslim communities in New York City. And, you know, now you have all these NSA revelations where, you know, we're kind of all seeing that we are being targeted in some way, shape, or form. And I think, you know, even for folks who aren't directly impacted by something like stop and frisk, I think that they should be wary of it because, you know, it sets a precedent, right? It sets a precedent for the types of behaviors that law enforcement can engage in. And while those behaviors may start with one particular community, they often expand to include